Good afternoon and welcome to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Toro Law Center in Central Islip. Every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today on the docket, we're talking about the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, also known as HIPAA. Here with us today to explain in plain English the law on this topic, we have Melissa Greenberger, Adjunct Professor of Law and Practitioner in Residence at Toro Law Center's clinic. Melissa Greenberger is a Toro Law graduate herself and a full-time attorney at the Law Center's Mortgage Foreclosure Clinic. In addition to her current role, Melissa previously worked as a criminal defense attorney, personal injury attorney, and as an assistant town attorney in the town of Islip. Melissa is also a small claims arbitrator in the Suffolk County District Courts and presently sits as the acting village justice in the village of Lake Grove. So I suppose I should call you judge. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.
So we're not talking about mortgage foreclosure issues today.
Not today.
We're talking about something having to do with healthcare. Can you explain what HIPAA is? We all have heard the word HIPAA, and the what it stands for is a mouthful, but what really is it?
Sure. HIPAA is a federal law. It actually stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And it was enacted in part to ensure that workers could keep their health insurance coverage if they changed jobs. And one of the other reasons it was enacted was to protect people's health records and information, because people have an expectation that their health information should be kept private. There are several parts to HIPAA, different rules. One deals with transaction and code sets, which really pertains to billing. There's the privacy rule, which pertains to health information. That's really what we're going to focus on today. There's a security rule, which deals with electronic information. A national identifier rule, which deals with health provider IDs, and the enforcement rule, which deals with penalties, which can be both civil and criminal. Although most people equate HIPAA with privacy, it really does have a lot of other aspects, and the P in HIPAA has nothing to do with privacy.
That's great. So who has to comply with HIPAA?
Covered entities and business associates have to comply with the privacy and security rules. Covered entities are health plans, which would be insurance companies, healthcare providers, so doctors, nurses, social workers, dentists, hospitals, labs, anyone who does diagnostic testing, and also healthcare clearinghouses. Those are entities that process information for healthcare providers and submit it to other entities, such as for billing.
And is that a business associate or is that something else?
No, a business associate is an agency or entity that does work for the covered entity, and that involves confidential or protected health information. So, for example, an accountant for a medical practice would be a business associate. A software development company would be a business associate. If you've ever gotten one of those calls from a pharmacy about it's time to refill a prescription, those calls are made by Refill Reminder Services, and those are business associates. All of those business associates have to have business associate contracts with the covered entities.
So other than people walking into typically their doctor's office and having to sign a long piece of paper, sometimes it's one side, sometimes it's two sides, that has something to do with HIPAA and privacy, why is this issue important to our listeners and why should they be paying attention?
Well, HIPAA gives patients a lot of rights. And whether you're a patient, a caretaker, or a covered entity or business associate, HIPAA is important to you. So the law gives patients a whole host of rights, and it's important for people to pay attention to what those rights are so that they know how to access them.
So what type of information is actually protected under HIPAA's privacy rule?
Okay, any information that's created or received by a healthcare provider relating to the patient's past, present, or future medical, physical, mental health, that would all be considered protected health information. And anything that can identify a patient would be considered to be patient identifiers and has to be kept private. So the obvious ones are a patient's name, an address, a date of birth, a social security number, but things such as your admission date to a facility, your discharge date, those are also confidential information or bits of information. Someone's fingerprints or full face photos are also protected. So let's say you go to an oral surgeon who takes before and after photos, and the oral surgeon decides to put those pictures up in his waiting area for everybody to see what great work he does. That could be a violation of your HIPAA rights, unless you've signed an authorization allowing that.
And so if somebody were to call, I don't know, an employer or somebody other than the patient were to call the doctor's office and say, Can you tell me if Melissa Greenberger is a patient? Is the fact that you're a patient protected?
That is. That is. And actually, employers can't get access unless there's a written authorization, but HIPAA has exceptions. So one healthcare provider can share information with another healthcare provider without getting your consent. And the only way you'd know that is if you read the Notice of Privacy Practices, mm-hmm. and you'd see how many different exceptions there are to that confidential information.
And so are those notices, we'll talk more about the Notice of Privacy Practices, but is it common to include all of the exceptions in the form? Is it a standard form, or does every medical office have their own variation of these privacy notices?
They vary considerably. In fact, I've kind of taken up a collection as a little hobby over the years of going to providers and collecting these forms. You'd be amazed how different they can be. The fonts are different. Whether it's a booklet or a one sheet of paper or a trifold, they have all different forms of it. But there's specific information that must be contained in that notice.
And then do they often contain more information or other information? I mean, they're variations, right?
There's a lot of variations. So one of the rights that you have under HIPAA as a patient is to be given this Notice of Privacy Practices. Mm-hmm. So what happens, like you said, you go to the doctor, they give you this form. Sometimes they actually give you the notice, and sometimes they don't give you the notice. They just give you a piece of paper that says, I have received and reviewed this office's Notice of Privacy Practices. And most people just sign it and they just ignore it. I usually like to ask to see it. Not that I'm going to necessarily spend the time to read it if I don't have a reason to read it, but I like to actually have it so that I sign that I received it and reviewed it. I can actually say that I received it. So I think people should get into the habit of asking for it, and they'll know what disclosures are being made of their health information. It tells you how to access your records. It tells you how to make complaints. So there's a lot of information in that notice that people need to be aware of.
And of course, most of the time when people are going to seek medical attention, they're sort of in a rush, kind of in crisis. They're not feeling well, and the last thing they want to deal with is trying to read something that they just don't understand or that they don't feel that they're going to have use for in the future.
That's true. That's true. And part of the problem, too, is that it's supposed to be in plain English so mm-hmm. that a layperson can understand it, but a lot of times they are very technical.
So is it common for any of the medical offices that have websites where they post their privacy notices on their website?
I have seen it on websites. They are under HIPAA. They're required to post it in the office in a prominent location, but they're also required to give patients a paper copy of that notice on the first visit. And any time they make changes to their privacy practices, the patient's supposed to be given a new notice.
And where are the medical providers getting guidance with respect to the completion of these notices? Are the privacy notices being prepared by law firms? Are they coming off of the insurance company's best practices forms? Who's giving them guidance?
My guess, and I don't know for sure where they're getting them, but my guess is that they have counsel helping to prepare them. I'm sure for the big pharmacy chains, their counsel is helping prepare them. And also the Department of Health and Human Services is responsible for enforcing HIPAA. So if you go to their website, they do have a lot of guidance and information about what needs to be included.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned that one of the things in the Notice of Privacy Practices that you've seen is that physicians can share information with other physicians without the patient's knowledge. So does that mean it's not just a physician that they're referring you to? It could be anybody for any purpose that you could be included in a medical study?
No. I mean, two doctors can't go out and play golf and decide to discuss their patients just because, you know, there are rules. So the exceptions for HIPAA requiring written consent would be for treatment, for payment, and for operations, the business operations of the facility. For treatment, meaning your doctor, your primary care doctor, refers you to another doctor, a specialist. Mm-hmm. They can discuss your information because it's being used for your treatment. The doctor can also contact your insurance company. Can you imagine if your doctor's receptionist called you every week that, you know, after you went to the doctor, oh, hi, I need to know, can you consent to me sending a bill to your insurance company? I mean, that would be ludicrous. So for billing, payments, that can just be done without your consent. And operations, things such as, you know, having an accountant go through the records and do the billing, having an audit come in, having software and database, things like that. But again, if you're dealing with a business associate, you need a written agreement with them.
And so it is possible to modify the your own desire for privacy or for sharing of information. For example, you have a lawsuit and you need your attorney to access medical records. You have to fill out a form in order for your physician, your treating physician, to provide those records to your attorney or the courts.
Correct. And there's actually in New York State, if you go on the New York State court system website, they have a sample form to be used for that. And those forms have to be filled out before they can release records to attorneys.
So, excellent. So that's some really good information. I know coming up, we're going to talk about some other issues like what happens when you refuse to sign this notice of privacy, or do you have to, and can you modify it? So I want to thank you, Melissa, and please stay with us, because coming up, we're going to continue our discussion on HIPAA and how it can affect you. You're listening to On the Docket with Toro Law Dean Patricia Salkin on Long Island News 103.9. Welcome back to On the Docket. This is Toro Law Dean Patricia Salkin, and I'm here again with Melissa Greenberger. Melissa, we're glad to have you here to continue our discussion about HIPAA. Before we get to the refusal to sign, can you fill us in about some of the other rights that people have with respect to their medical records?
Sure. HIPAA gives people the right to access their records and get copies of their health information. The New York State Public Health Law enables the provider to charge 70 cents per page for copies. So let's say you've been to the hospital and you spent a couple of weeks in the hospital for some reason. Imagine that hospital record is going to be very, very thick. It's going to have your progress notes and blood results and lab results and x-ray reports and a whole host of information. That could be 200, 300 pages. If you have to pay 75 cents a page, you're looking at close to, you know, hundreds of dollars. So instead of actually going to the hospital and asking for them to give you a copy and you pay 75 cents, what you can do is you want to take them to another doctor. You sign a release for the doctor who you want to receive those records. And generally, it's a collegial thing in the profession that one healthcare provider will provide records to another healthcare provider free of charge. So you really can save yourself some money that way. There's also, you have the right under HIPAA to correct records, and if there are any omissions or errors that you want changed in your records, that's your right as a patient under HIPAA. Again, we were talking about the notice of privacy practice and what's in it and the exceptions for requiring consent. A patient can limit or restrict things that they want to be disclosed. So if I, as a patient, say to my doctor, you know what, I really don't want my spouse to know about particular test results, and I put that in writing, that healthcare provider cannot share that information because I've restricted it. I can also give access to other people. Let's say I want my mom to be able to have copies of my records. I can authorize that. So people do have a lot of freedoms, but they need to know about it. And again, the only way they know it is if they're getting the notice of privacy practice.
And I assume that some of those rights are intended to ensure that people will have a free and honest conversation with their physician without the fear of somebody else finding out what they might not want disclosed.
Right, right.
So we all get these forms to sign when we visit the doctor. You may look at them differently as a lawyer going in who's got an interest in this. What if you find something wrong with the form and you want to cross it out, or you want to add something in, or what happens if you just don't want to sign the form? Does that mean that the physician is not going to treat you?
No, they cannot refuse to treat you if you don't sign it. If they haven't given you the form, that's one thing. There's no reason for you to sign you received it. But let's say you get it, you don't want to read it, or you don't understand it. You do not have to sign that you received it and reviewed it. But the provider has to make a note. They make a note of the details, like when you were offered the form, when you refused it, and they'll initial it. That way, if there is an audit, they can show that they made a good faith effort to have you sign that.
Right. So you're still entitled to all of the rights under the federal law, whether you sign the form acknowledging your receipt of it or not. And the medical providers' policies are still their policies, whether you agree with them or not. So if you don't agree with it, the only choice is to walk out, but it's unlikely you're going to find another provider that's going to offer you an alternative.
That's true, yeah.
So what happens if you want to pick up a prescription at a local pharmacy for a friend or a family member? Will you be able to do that?
Absolutely. A pharmacist can decide that it's in the patient's best interest for someone else to get that. And so they'll allow other people to pick it up. I mean, it's been happening for years. It'll continue to happen. There's nothing under HIPAA that restricts that. There are other variations too. Like, let's say you're in a hospital, you have roommates in the hospital, right? Most people don't have private rooms. Now the doctor comes in to give you your test results or to talk to you about the days and how you're feeling, and you have a roommate, right? Isn't that a HIPAA violation? People say to me, well, I don't want that other person to know. But it's really not, because if there's somebody else there, a hospital doesn't really have the same expectation of privacy. So we change one fact. Let's say you have visitors, mm-hmm. and you have your own room, and you have visitors there, and the doctor comes in. If you don't ask your visitors to leave or tell the doctor not to speak in front of them, the doctor kind of presumes that it's okay. And under HIPAA, they are allowed to give that information in front of other people.
So let's talk about another situation of in front of other people. You mentioned earlier that a person's name is considered to be a patient identifier and it must be treated as protected information. Yet we all go to the pharmacy where the pharmacist or the technicians will call out the customer's names. Is that a violation of HIPAA?
Technically, no. That would be a disclosure incidental to their business practice. Okay, they have to call out a patient's name to let them know that their prescription's ready. What they can't do, though, is they can't call out, John Smith, your prescription for XYZ is now ready at the pharmacy. They can't give more information. HIPAA requires that they only disclose the minimal amount necessary to accomplish the objective. So there's no need to give too much information. Same thing with leaving phone messages. A patient can notify the provider, yes, you can contact me on my cell phone. Yes, you can leave messages on my home phone. You know what? I don't want you to send me postcards in the mail. I want it in an envelope. The patient can limit those disclosures. So if the patient says, I don't want you to leave a detailed message, and then the provider leaves a detailed message, that would be a HIPAA violation. Mm-hmm. But just calling to say, oh, this is Dr. So-and-so's office reminding you that you have an appointment tomorrow, that would be okay.
So what should somebody do if he or she believes that his or her health information has been disclosed improperly? I mean, is there a lawsuit here? Are people entitled to monetary damages? You know, what happens if there's a mistake or an intentional disclosure?
Okay. Actually, under HIPAA, they don't have a right to personally sue the doctor under a HIPAA violation. Their remedy would be to file a complaint with the privacy officer of the healthcare provider. And again, the only way you'll know who the privacy officer is that's contained in the Notice of Privacy Practices. So they can file a complaint with the privacy officer, or they can file a complaint with the Department of Health and Human Services, and they're responsible for investigating those complaints. Now, if the provider has negligently disclose that information. Let's say the doctor's retiring and he just takes his records and throws them in the trash can behind his office and someone accesses that. That would be a negligent act because he has to shred it or dispose of it some way that's more secure. So a patient could sue for negligence, but that's a state theory rather than the federal law of HIPAA.
So it seems like a lot of hassle. If it was a mistake, is it really just a disciplinary matter then with either the federal government or with the healthcare provider agency if the person's an employee?
Well, there are times where these companies, they have zero tolerance policies. So years ago, I forget what year it was, but former President Bill Clinton had gone into Presbyterian Hospital mm-hmm. For open heart surgery. And there was a story that broke where janitors and other workers were accessing these highly confidential medical records of the president. Those people were immediately fired. There was a report, too, that the janitor had been offered like a couple of $1,000 for his ID to get access. And so when someone, you know, takes actions, really egregious actions or blatant actions to disclose information improperly, they will be fired. But HIPAA itself, the penalties are civil and criminal. So there could be hefty fines. People could be sentenced to jail for these violations.
Are you aware of anybody who's been criminally prosecuted for HIPAA violations?
I don't know of any criminal violations yet, but the civil penalties, there are some really hefty civil penalties. CVS paid $2.25 million in 2009 to settle a case that involved improper disposal of records. UCLA Health System.
And who did they pay the money to?
They pay it to Health and Human Services System. Okay. It's paid to the government. UCLA Health Systems paid close to $1 million for violations involving celebrities' medical records. So even celebrities, although they may not have an expectation of privacy when they're out on the street with the paparazzi, they still have the same privacy expectations and rights to privacy under HIPAA as you and I do.
Right. Well, Well, so now that electronic health records are becoming more widely used, what protections have to be in place to safeguard the privacy of those records? Oftentimes now we go into our doctor's office and they meet us with an iPad or a laptop and all of the information is stored there, but people can access, you know, and there are security breaches, as we know.
Right. They have to have encryption. They have to have passwords. The whole goal is to limit access to those who need to know. There needs to be some sort of access limitation and auditing trail so that you can find out who accessed your information, whether they made any changes, when those changes were made, why it happened. Affinity Healthcare paid $1.2 million for a HIPAA violation regarding a leased copy machine. What the heck does a copy machine have to do with HIPAA, you wonder? Copy machines now have hard drives in them. So everything that gets copied is stored on this hard drive. It was a leased machine. They turn it back. Somebody accesses the hard drive, and all the patient's health information was on it. And so that resulted in a $1.2 million fine because of that. So it's really a concern with electronic records and backing up.
So would a leasing company be considered a business associate? And would they have to sign now a HIPAA release with the medical care provider?
I would think there's a question as to that, and they might very well be. Yeah.
Right. Very, very, very interesting. So what can you do as I guess once a child becomes 18, then the parent is no longer entitled to medical records because they become an adult.
Right.
And then you have the sandwich generation of people that have aging parents who are getting medical care, and sometimes there might be memory issues or dementia issues. But unless you get your child or your parent to agree to have you be able to access those records, you can't talk to their physicians. Is that true?
Well, again, it has to be an exercise of professional judgment. So if a healthcare provider feels that it's in the patient's best interest to make those disclosures, so for caretakers, they could make those disclosures in the patient's best interest, but there would have to be something in writing otherwise.
Right. I want to thank you, Melissa, for joining us. Melissa Greenberger wraps it up for us here on The Docket, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you.